Hey folks, this is Frank from the Nonproductive Network, wishing all of you a happy birthday 2020. That's not what anybody says. A happy new year from everyone here at Nonpro. Yeah, that's it. In this new year, we need your help to make our network better than ever, just by answering a few questions. Go to non-productive.com/survey and tell us a little bit about what you want from our shows. And you can enter for a chance to win a fabulous thank you prize and, of course, get the opportunity to sound off about everything you think about our station. Once again, that's non-productive.com/survey, and thanks for all your support. Hello, SNL nerd fans. This is your executive producer, Frank, here, once again introducing this extra special episode of the show, reviewing some of the best of the very first year of SNL Nerds. Listen in as we revisit Mohawk Man, celebrate the Californians, and low-key stalk Tabitha Sorin. There'll be a new episode of the show next week. Follow the show on SNL Nerd Show on Twitter and Facebook, or follow Darren at Darren Credible and Trumbull at Trumbull Comic. Now, on to what we are calling a show.
Next, we had the musical guest of the evening, Greta Van Fleet, which I was surprised because I was assuming Greta Van Fleet was like one person.
No.
And it's a band with four dudes.
Have you never heard of Greta Van Fleet before this?
I think I'd heard the name, but I'd never seen a picture or heard any of their music.
Yeah. All right. So basically, they're a pretty new band. I think they got together in like, I want to say 2015.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they're new. Yeah, they're very new. And I mean, the elephant in the room, they sound just like Led Zeppelin. Like,
what I wrote down was, imagine if Queen totally sucked. That was what I wrote in my notes.
Actually, let me change that. They formed in 2012, and they got signed in 2017, mm-hmm. and now they're on SNL.
And when do they get good?
Wow. You're not a fan.
I did not like the Greta Van Fleet.
Then you would probably
the lead singer's voice was really obnoxious.
Yeah, I see.
I didn't like their look. They had this very contrived look where they're trying to look like a band from the 70s or
the voice.
God, I just hated them.
The voice sound is like a mix of Robert Plant and the dude from Rush.
But bad.
Yeah. Hey, actually, you would probably... here, you probably like this, too, because like one of the things that they're well-known for, if you Google them, you're familiar with the blog Pitchfork?
Yeah.
Where they reviewed their latest album that came out in October called Anthem of the Peaceful Army.
Mm-hmm.
1.6 out of 10.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Let me read a little bit. I'll just read it real quick.
Way to go, Pitchfork.
The first paragraph. Greta Van Fleet sounds like they did weed exactly once, called the cops, and tried to record a Led Zeppelin album before they arrested themselves. The poor kids from Frankenmuth, Michigan, don't even realize they're more of an algorithmic fever dream than an actual rock band. While they're selling out shows all over the world, somewhere in a boardroom, a half a dozen people are figuring out just how exactly Jimmy Page and Robert Plant are supposed to fit into the SUV with the rest of the Greta Van Fleet boys on Carpool Karaoke. He did not like this album.
No, that sounds bad.
Yeah, and I'll finish it on the last... Okay, all right, so this is like the last paragraph. So when the Greta Van Fleet of your favorite artist finally lands on your morning playlist, spark up a bowl of nostalgia and enjoy the self-satisfied buzz of recognizing something you already know. It's the cheapest high in music.
Ooh, that is harsh.
It's
not inaccurate, but that is harsh.
It's scathing. Yeah, like I mean, I'm a big classic rock dude. Are you into classic rock?
Yeah, I enjoy the classic rock.
Yeah, you enjoy the rocks? The rocks and the
rolls? I enjoy the rocking. I enjoy the rolling. I enjoy like when they put the rocking and the rolling together.
Ooh.
But
yeah, like basically I tried to get, I listen. This is something else I knew I kind of wanted to do because I've noticed mm-hmm. that whenever we do the music part,
yeah.
of these episodes, like none of us really have anything to say.
Yeah.
So I want to, like when we record these episodes, I'm going to listen to the latest album of the musical guest. So I'll have something to say.
Oh, okay.
And I listened to the latest album by Greta Van Fleet. And yeah, it's just basically It sounds like Zeppelin, but it ain't Zeppelin, and it's just kind of it's kind of like a corporate version of authenticity, I guess you're
trying. See, I was going to take the opposite tack. I was thinking whenever we come across a musical guest that we do not care for, we could just talk about Weezer instead.
Ooh. Wow, I like that.
So I was like, why waste time talking about the Greta Van Fleet? Let's talk about Surf Wax America.
Oh. You break your car to work, I'll take my board. And when you're out of fuel, I'm still afloat. All along the... Okay, I'm sorry. Wow, that...
The guy totally dies at the end of that song, right?
Does he?
I feel like he does.
Holy shit, I never even thought of that.
Well, the undertow pulls him in, and he's like, now I can never go home.
Fuck, maybe he does die. Shit, God damn it. Not, wow, all you right. Bummed me out.
Well, this has been this week's... Wow. This Week in Weezer.
Shocking realization. All right, well, let's go. But, yeah, with Greta Van Fleet, I feel like the band... You remember how back in the day, like in the 90s, like ripped and faded jeans were a big thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, people just loved like kind of like having tattered jeans. And
yep, it was the pre-distressed.
Look. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah. Like, but it came from like an organic, natural thing where people just wore faded jeans. But
and we kind of have that with like t-shirts now where they have the pre-distressed looking t-shirts.
But yeah, the vintage old school t-shirts. And then it got so big that they were selling jeans that were like pre-ripped and the companies were selling faded shirts, and it just like the authenticity and the organicness of it just was kind of just like, oh, this is like
it got co-opted.
Exactly. And I feel like the band is like that, like they're kind of, it's like, you know, like a plastic fruit, like it's of a manufactured version of something that's supposed to be organic and natural. And that's I mean, if you haven't listened to the original Led Zeppelin, I could see how you might like this band. Because this band is very popular. They have like a huge following.
I mean, I don't doubt that they're popular because they made it to SNL, so they're obviously doing well for themselves.
Yeah, but exactly. But yes.
God, they were just not for me, man.
Yeah, like, I mean, we've listened to the original, so when we hear like bands like Greta Van Fleet and compare it to...
It reminded me of, there's an old Far Side cartoon where they show a guy at a soundboard at a concert and he's accidentally turned all the dials over to suck and the audience is booing the band. That's kind of how I felt while I was watching Greta Van Fleet. I just thought they were fucking awful.
I can't defend it. Yeah. The lead singer was like really stiff too. Did you notice that or am I nuts?
I mean, they just seemed very self-conscious, like, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing about them seemed genuine to me, you know?
Agreed. I'll give you that. But I don't know, if you like it, that's how you swing it, then think they're hot,
I mean,
back, they're
honestly, the biggest surprise was like, oh, I thought they were one person. I was expecting like probably like a woman, like a single woman with a backing band.
I think they were named after a woman, but yeah.
And it was like, okay, this is like a Lynyrd Skynyrd thing, where it sounds like it's one person, but...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That, like, ages ago when I was a kid, I was surprised when I first learned that Lynyrd Skynyrd wasn't one person. It was actually a group
You're like,
of
which
people.
One of you is Lynyrd Skynyrd?
And then some of them die in a plane crash, and it gets very confusing.
Oof. All right. Wow. And, way to bring down the podcast, fella.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise, wow. I didn't know. Wow,
I find the plane crash of Lynyrd Skynyrd less depressing than I found Greta Van Fleet said.
Mother of God, what is wrong with you?
I did not like them.
I can't defend them. Like, it's... Yeah, I can't defend it. So next we have the Lincoln High School sketch.
Before we get into that, just want to mention one thing.
What?
I want to mention one thing.
This is unplanned.
You know, it is.
You're going off script.
I'm going rogue. You know how SNL, they usually show you like a little peek of an upcoming sketch. You see like them setting up the set.
Yeah.
The flats and stuff.
Right.
When they were going into the first sketch, they showed the stagehands working on it, and they had one stagehand with a mohawk.
All right.
I want us to interview this guy.
Why?
What? Just because he looks cool. Because he's a guy with a mohawk in 2019. Tell me he doesn't have stories to tell.
I have
no idea what the name of the stagehand is, but I am starting this right now. I'm starting a campaign. We've got to get this guy on the show.
This is unprecedented. I did not see this coming, people.
Mohawk stagehand, I want to talk to you. We want you to come here. We're not far from the city.
No, not at
we,
all.
We can meet you across the, over the bridge or something like that.
We'll chip in for a remote. We could Skype it in.
That's right.
We can maybe go and have these on an Uber.
Somebody has to get word to Mohawk stagehand person.
So internet, do what you will and make it so.
That's right. We want to find out about this guy.
That's right. Make our dreams a reality.
All right. I already tweeted about this on the SNL Nerds Twitter account.
Right.
That's at SNL Nerds Show, by the way.
Yes.
And we gotta find a way to make this happen.
All right. This is unprecedented, but I'm in.
Okay. Now, okay, you saw a lot of crew people.
Yes.
Oh,
a thing on our show.
I was just about to say this.
A quest that we have developed over the course of season 44.
Yeah, and I know where you're going.
Is
with
a particular
this,
crew member that I happened to spot during one show. I don't even remember what episode it was anymore.
Mohawk McBeardy. Yeah.
Yes.
You call him Mohawk McBeardy.
Sure, why not?
We call him Mohawk Man.
Just yeah, but he has a glorious beard as well.
He does.
The man just understands male grooming.
I originally referred to him as Mohawk stagehand, okay. But then I heard from
a friend
that he is, you know, he was likely a director or something somewhere higher up in the food chain.
I believe he's Kate McKinnon's floor finisher. Now, that's not the technical name of his position at the show. It'd be
right.
Whatever.
So he's the guy who comes in last minute and makes sure Kate McKinnon looks correct.
I believe he's basically Kate McKinnon's quality control. He's the one that's given her bottle of fizzy water during the commercial breaks or something.
Nice.
He's basically there preening her and making sure she's ready.
That seems like a good gig.
Interesting.
You get to follow Kate McKinnon around for a couple hours.
Yeah.
Now, in a
non-creepy way.
Don't quote me on that because that's just through observation. Like
right.
Seeing what he's actually doing on the floor, but I don't know his exact title.
But he seemed to be concentrated on Kate.
Yeah, he seemed to be doting exclusively on Kate.
Okay, I like this. We are finding out more information.
Well, I can just tell you who he is.
Oh, what? You can?
You guys don't actually know who he is?
This is going to be like...
Do
I want to know? This is like...
I feel like we should... Like
do you want the mystery to end, or do you want to keep this going for another season?
You have a proper name for Mohawk Man.
I do. Now, I mean, like, I don't know if he wants this being broadcast out to the world, you know, your millions of
okay.
Oh, that's like Capone's vault over here.
So
yeah,
I mean,
so maybe you should just like tell us the name off air, and we could just put in a bleep or something.
Now, will you actually put it? Like,
no.
The first name is fine,
mm-hmm.
but let's at least make the listeners maybe dig through the credits or something to paste it. All
okay, I like I
I'll,
like this,
I'll give
and,
you a first
and
name.
Yeah, we don't want to invade his privacy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just think he looks really cool.
Yeah.
And we want to know more about him.
Sure.
I mean, because, you know, he's a dude with a mohawk. He's got to have stories to tell.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's got to be awesome.
Did you get to meet him or talk to him?
No, but I'm aware of him.
Okay.
And who he is.
All right.
But no,
all right.
I saw him at the after party, but I didn't actually interact with him. I should have gone up to him and said, did you realize you're internet famous? There's these two weirdos out in New Jersey that are really good.
They are obsessed with you. Well, I mean, if we're going to get his name, I feel like we should have a little fanfare, like do a little drum roll.
Like a drum roll? All right, here we go.
So, like, okay, so the name of Mohawk Man is...
Awesome Joey.
Awesome.
That is not disappointing in the least.
Good.
Awesome Joey.
Well, no, I mean, I added the awesome.
Oh, okay.
But you can work with Joey and maybe figure it out.
I love the idea that he's known as Awesome Joey around the set, though.
No, I've built a
whole... No, that's his new nickname now.
Yeah. Awesome Joey.
My headcanon says he's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I feel it's warranted without having ever spoken to the guy.
I mean, you got a mohawk. You're working with Kate McKinnon. You're getting her water and stuff.
But he's,
I mean,
people on podcasts
great.
Are talking about you.
Yeah.
No, he's doing something right.
It's, yeah. That's wow.
There you go. You got a first name.
All right. This is
take
this
it and
is,
run with it. If you can figure it out from there, all the better.
This is more than I was expecting. This is
we told
this is
you.
What, this is what you want in a season finale.
We told you this is a special sweeps week.
Oh
sweeps
my
week.
God. Oh my God.
This Joey is, Mohawk. My God.
This
Joey
is
Mohawk.
Incredible.
There you go.
This is the Joey Mohawk.
Plot thickens. You are laser focusing in on the goal here. You're
Mohawk Man is Joey Mohawk.
My God. This summer just got off to a great start.
Wow. you have made our day. We could end this podcast
this
right
and it was
now.
A success.
We're not even going to talk about the episode. We're done.
Yeah. Who
3 hours on a train to get out here. Let's just call it. I'll just head out.
Sure. Just throw my notes in the trash.
So next, we go back to the sketches.
Sketches.
We had a sketch called Tabitha, which sadly was not about the daughter from Bewitched.
Yeah,
I was all hyped for it.
Or the old MTV news anchor,
Tabitha Soren.
Yeah,
I remember her.
Remember that?
She was a cutie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What happened to Tabitha Soren? I'm gonna Google that.
No, let's, dude, we gotta talk about this sketch first.
Okay. Do we have to?
We gotta do it.
Okay. It has Leslie Jones as an Oprah Winfrey type talk show host. She's the author of the book The Obedient Husband. She's training her husband like a dog, and it cuts the cell phone footage of her scolding her husband like a dog. I got the point. 30 seconds in, it was really repetitive. There were no surprises.
Well, at the very end, there was. I mean, I agree with you. It was like a repetitive. Oh, like they talk to the husbands like a dog, and the husband behaved like dogs. None of the men have lines. They just kind of give like a...
Yeah, you keep going. I'm going to Google Tabitha Soren now.
You'd rather do the... Oh.
I really would.
All right. So basically, like, the women talk to their husbands like their dogs. Like, Craig, did you do this? Did you make this mess? Craig. And, like, of course, the husbands do, like, that little dog look of shame. Like,
and they had Rachel Brosnahan and Cecily Strong come on as to... women who had followed her advice and retrained the men in their lives.
Right, and the big twist was at the end was Cecily Strong talks to her husband, Beck Bennett, and is like, whatever her husband's name was, like, Dave, do you have a second family? Did you go out and have a second family? Mm-hmm. It's a bad Dave, bad Dave. And then even Tabitha was like, oh my God, what? He has a second family? That's a pretty big problem.
Okay, this is interesting. Tabitha Soren, former
MTV
news reporter. She also worked for ABC News and NBC News. She is now an American fine art photographer.
Photographer?
She became a photographer.
Huh.
Yeah.
All right.
After working in television news, Soren spent a year studying art and photography at Stanford University. Over the past 10 years, her projects have been published in New York Times Magazine, Canteen, Vanity Fair, McSweeney's, Sports Illustrated, and New York, among others.
There you go.
She's had public collections.
Huh.
And she's made a whole second career for herself.
We're going to
Tabitha Soren.
We're going to have to tag Tabitha Soren when we put this episode out.
I know.
Wow, man.
I'm excited.
Now do Kurt Loder. Where is he?
Kurt Loder.
I'm trying to think of other.
What was the guy with the big hair?
Ricky Rackman?
No, not him. The blondish guy. The
Kevin Seal?
I can picture this guy.
Oh, Adam Curry.
Adam Curry. That was.
Isn't he like a CEO or something?
Oh, he probably is. That sounds very correct.
Typical Curry.
Okay.
I think he works behind the scenes now. He's like a. I feel he's like a. He's an exec somewhere.
Kurt Loder. His listing says American film critic.
Film critic.
Film critic, author, columnist, and television personality.
Yeah. The Lodes. Well, maybe he didn't like to be called that.
The Lodes? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds halfway insulting.
As soon as I said that, I was like, that's not a good nickname.
Fell into the field. His entire journalism background is 4 weeks. You can learn. That's it. Nothing else. You can learn journalism in 4 weeks. It's not an overcomplicated thing. It's very, very simple.
So the next sketch.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Kurt Loder, less interesting than Tabitha Soren.
Oh.
Tabitha Soren, we had a nice twist.
Yeah. Yeah. And Adam Curry, we will get to you in a moment.
We will do some research. We will record a supplemental episode about what happened to all the MTV VJs.
We got to look up Ricky Rackman. We got to look up Duffy.
We Karen Duff. Was it Karen Duff or Duffy?
I think it was Duffy. Then she went to Karen Duff.
Oh, okay.
I believe.
Okay.
Because she wanted to be legit.
Yeah.
And then there was Downtown Julie Brown.
Downtown Julie Brown. And
Eric Neese.
What's her name? She was the female in the original five, and she married Bobby Brady on that horrible 90s Brady show.
Oh, Nina Blackwood?
Not Nina Blackwood. That was the other. She was another one of the original.
Dan Cortez.
Yes, it was Dan Cortez. They had a gay wedding between Bobby Brady and Dan Cortez.
And I am here for it. I support you and your love. That's right.
Not
love knows no bounds.
God, again, I can picture this woman, and I know people who are listening to this. They're shouting the names.
Well, go
right now.
All right. Well, okay. We should really talk about the rest of the show.
Do we have to?
We got two more sketches.
Okay.
Man.
Well, you start. I'm going to Google original five MTV.
All
DJs.
Right, guys. I apologize for this thing going off the rails so terribly. So the next sketch is. Basically, they do a parody of the
Martha Quinn.
Martha Quinn. Oh, that's right.
Okay, now I can move on. Dude, I'm not gonna have that in the back of my head driving me insane.
I think you blew out a speaker with that. Martha, she wasn't related to Colin, right?
No, I don't believe so.
It was just a coincidence.
I'd have to Google to say that for sure, and God knows I've done enough of that.
Okay, all right.
Okay,
so now you can sleep at night.
Yeah.
Now you got me wondering what happened to Martha Quinn now.
Oh, God damn it.
No, you started this. This is on you.
You finished this.
I was going to move on.
All right.
I had one foot out the door.
We're clicking on Martha Quinn. We are. All right.
So the parody. All right. So this is a good gravy. So this is. They did a parody of the viral Gillette commercial. The commercial. The commercial of Gillette that kind of challenged toxic masculinity that everybody's talking about. It's all the rage. But they did it with Kool-Aid and the Kool-Aid Man.
The Kool-Aid Man.
So it was basically that. Like basically how the Kool-Aid Man teaches young children and young boys how it's cool to just burst into people's houses and like how that perpetuates Kool-Aid culture.
They used an old Dane Cook line when he had his routine about Kool-Aid Man. It was like more like, oh no. I mean, that was totally out of Dane Cook's act.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
It was a
very quick thing. It was kind of undeveloped. Honestly, it went over my head that it was a parody of the Gillette ad. You say that now, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I kind of knew it because I haven't seen the whole ad. I've seen pieces of it.
I watched it. It was fine.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people are getting so...
People are angry about everything these days.
Yeah, people just go apeshit over everything.
Everything offends and everything upset. Some things are justified, but then some things are... We have bigger fish to fry, people.
Such as Martha Quinn joined Sirius Satellite Radio in 2005.
Wow.
Hosting a 1-hour weekly show from her home in Malibu called Martha Quinn Presents Gods of the Big 80s for the Big 80s channel. After Sirius merged with XM Radio, the channel was rebranded as the 80s on 8. And the show is simply titled Martha Quinn Presents. She was...
That sounds pretty cool.
Showbiz show with David Spade. She did the 80s game with Martha Quinn, a PC trivia game developed by Funkatron.
Of course.
Which I just love that name. I just want to say the name Funkatron.
That's my nickname in high school.
That's right.
What's up, Funkatron?
I'm just seeing you now with a giant kid and play hairstyle, parachute pants.
Oh, nice cross-colored shirt.
Throwing down the cardboard, doing some old-school breakdancing.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh,
my God. I was the talk of the town.
In December 2017, Martha hosted a show for public television called The 80s, (My Music). So she did a lot of 80s nostalgia type stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming still married to Bobby Brady in the fictional world of the Bradys.
Here's hoping.
Something.
Hoping those crazy kids can made it work.
Yeah. So next,
final sketch.
Final sketch in,
wow,
in
that,
10 to 1 land.
Look, we've gone on tangents, but that was like the tangents to end all tangents.
Yeah.
That was...
Yeah.
We almost became a whole new podcast with that.
Yeah. I still haven't looked up Adam Curry, so we got that in our back pocket.
We'll leave that for next episode.
That's right. Teaser.
Little teaser.
Next
cliffhanger.
Next we had Barbie interns. They did this once before.
Yes, they did. It was with another thing that I can't remember.
Yeah, it was with people. Ken has an Instagram account, and they're focus grouping people to come up with captions for the pictures in Ken's Instagram account.
Yeah.
And the joke is none of them have a clue.
Right. Gardner was in, she kind of had some like clueless things to say.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Davidson, of course.
Very light episode for Heidi Gardner.
Very light.
We barely saw her.
Yeah, just like sprinklings of Gardner.
Yeah.
But it's pretty Davidson.
I didn't like that. She must have had something developed that didn't get it past dress or didn't get picked.
Yeah.
And don't sit on Heidi Gardner, Lorne.
That's right.
We need a little more Melissa Villaseñor. We need some Heidi Gardner.
Yeah.
These are the new young people. They're the future of the show.
Yeah.
We need to develop this talent.
Thank you.
The future is female, Lorne.
That's right, man. Yeah. Grr.
Yeah. I don't. Did she show up before the Kool-Aid Man thing?
Heidi?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Was she in something in passing? She I thought was in you the mentioned Kool-Aid. Her name earlier.
She wasn't in the Tabitha thing. She wasn't
in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. No, was she in Millennial Millions?
She could have been in the Millennials. I don't know why they didn't put her in there, but
yeah.
She wasn't.
Very light Heidi Gardner.
Very light.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was in the Action 9 News. Because she was the woman with the unfortunate
last that's
name.
Right. You're right. You're right.
Yeah,
you're
all right. So maybe it wasn't that.
Okay.
All right, so we take it back, Lauren.
So she showed up a little bit, but
all right.
We're watching you, Lauren.
That's right.
We are watching you.
We are watching you. And we're doing that Robert De Niro.
That's right. We're doing that little...
Meet the parents.
Pointing to our eyes, pointing to you with two fingers.
We're putting the fear of God into Lauren Michaels right now.
That's right.
We're physically doing it. We know none of you listeners can see it, but we're doing it.
We're doing it.
Just know we're doing it.
Because we're truthful.
Yeah.
We are truthful broadcasters.
Right. The sketch was okay. I mean, I will say this. Like, Rachel Brosnahan, I did like her in, like, pretty much all these sketches. I thought she, she was definitely game to, in all these sketches. She didn't phone it in. She gave 100%. I think she was really good and strong in all these sketches. And, like, especially this last sketch, I feel like she wasn't given that much, but what she... God, she gave a lot. She elevated it, I think.
Yeah.
I think she's a really good sketch performer.
I mean,
I would like to see her in another episode.
I thought she was okay. I wasn't wild about her, honestly.
What?
I thought she was fine. I just didn't think she was great. I honestly thought this was a pretty mediocre episode.
I mean, I'll give
overall.
You that, yeah.
I hardly anything grabbed me except the urn thing to stop the awkward conversations.
Right.
And I just have one more thing to say.
Go for it.
Adam Curry is a podcaster, announcer, and internet entrepreneur and media personality.
We were going to
hold
this! Known
for his stint as a VJ on MTV and being one of the first celebrities personally to create and administer websites. So that's interesting.
Yeah, so he's like a businessman.
This is what he looks like these days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oof.
He's still got the blondish hair. He doesn't have the sort of mullety thing, but he looks like a really old young man.
Yeah, that's a good. He looks like who's that dude that was on Entertainment Tonight?
John Tesh.
Yeah, he has a Tesh look, Tesh-y vibe.
He has been called he was apparently an early podcaster, and he has been called the Podfather because of his efforts.
He was.
So we owe this podcast to Adam Curry.
Thanks.
Apparently.
Thanks,
former
Adam.
MTV DJ.
I thought we had Mark Maron to thank, but I guess it's Adam Curry.
All right, how you doing, what the fuckers?
Yeah.
All right. We good?
We good?
We good?
Yeah.
All right, Martha Quinn, we good? Everybody okay?
Boomer.
All right.
Boomer and LaFleur.
Boomer lives. We're going to dive into the show in a minute, but first we got some news. We got some exciting news
in
our world.
Nerd news.
Nerd news. So last week, as you might remember, if you listened to the show last week, we ended up going on a big tangent, as we are wont to do.
This was a tangent to end all tangents.
It was. That SNL had a sketch called Tabitha, which got us to reminiscing about...
Tabitha Soren
from MTV News.
I just said Tabitha Soren like just off the top of my head,
and then we were just like, wow, I haven't thought of Tabitha Soren in forever. Let's look up what she's doing right now.
Right.
We found out she's a photographer now.
Yeah,
and she's like sort of reinvented herself. Has a whole new career.
Yeah,
and we got a kick out of that, and we jokingly said at the end of the episode, we should tag Tabitha Soren in this,
right,
or tweet this to her. And then, like, later on, I thought, well, what the hell? I'll find her on Facebook, and I'll send it to her. She might get a kick out of it.
Yeah, you only live once.
And, so I found
YOLO.
Tabitha Soren on the Facebook, and I sent her a message, and I sent her a link to it, and she responded. She was nice enough to respond.
Yeah.
She said, I'll listen. Will I cringe?
Yeah, and I'd like to think do people send her cringeworthy stuff, I guess?
Well, I don't know. I think if you're in the public eye, and especially if you're a woman in the public eye, that's probably going to happen at some point.
Dudes are weird.
I explained, look, this came from a nice place. We just got a kick out of finding you and finding out what you're up to these days.
Yeah, we're decent folk.
And I told her, like, we don't talk about you until about 50 minutes in, so you don't have to listen to all that stuff beforehand if you just want to hear the stuff about you. And then she
cuts to the chase.
And then she responded later. She said, thanks, you two are very funny.
Boom.
So
We are in with Soarin.
We are taking this as an endorsement.
That's right. We're Soarin approved.
Tabitha Soarin approved. That's kid right. tested. Tabitha Soarin approved.
That's right. So this podcast is good enough for Tabitha Soarin. It's definitely good enough for you.
Absolutely. Even with our technical screw ups.
Yes. Even with that. That just makes us more endearing.
So please, give Tabitha Soarin some love. Go follow her on Twitter. She's on the Twitter. She has a Facebook page. I believe it was Tabitha Soarin Photography.
Yes.
As I recall, she has an exhibition coming up in Boston. If you're in the Boston area, go check that out.
Yeah. She's a friend of the podcast.
Friend of the show.
Yes, we hang out with celebrities now. We're big time.
I mean, if you define hanging out as exchanging two messages on Facebook with them. Yes.
Don't you?
We hang out with them.
That's how I do it. What, you hang out with people in like real life and not over the
internet?
Not
really, no.
Well, then,
Not really.
Oh, I didn't mean to. I got awkward.
It's fine. That's my lot in life. Next. Oh, God. It's the fucking Californians.
Okay, yeah, guys, we're going to go on a little bit of a rant on these Californian sketches.
We talked about the Californians.
Have we?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some more.
I mean, this is, I'm not going to describe the sketch because it's the Californians.
They're
all the
same.
It's fucking awful.
They're all the same.
It's
dropping F-bombs there, fella.
It's the worst SNL sketch ever.
Jeez, a loop.
I would watch Rob and Wendy Weiner on a loop
before
I'd watch the Californians.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my
God. I'm beside myself, sir. I agree with you. I'm with you. As far as sketches go, it's not great, which is why I never understand why they keep bringing it back.
Yeah.
Because I can understand if it was a sketch that the audience really loves and really looks forward to. Mm-hmm. When a sketch comes on and it's like a recurring sketch and the audience like applauds immediately before the sketch begins, like, oh, hey, yay, it's a Wayne's World, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard the audience like go crazy over the
no.
Like it's weird. Like
it never got much of a reaction. I always felt like it amused the SNL cast and writers more than it amused anybody else.
Yeah, very much so. It's like a sketch where every time they play it, like the audience, like they give some laughs and it's kind of like middling. Like, oh yeah, okay. It never gets huge, big. Like, we should definitely bring this sketch back, laughs.
No.
And they keep bringing it back. Like, the audience clearly doesn't want it, but they keep bringing
they
it back.
They did it had to be at least half a dozen times. It felt like a dozen.
Yeah. They even put it into
The
anniversary special. I'm like, no one wants this. Why are you shoving this out?
Yeah.
Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. I mean, it's the fetch. Stop.
We don't want it. Stop it.
And what kills me is like during the anniversary show, at one point, you know, they had to act something out else.
Yeah.
And they would be like, oh, we better cut that so that we have time to do the Californians. You know, that was a sentence that had to be said at some point.
And
while
like,
they were prepping that show.
And it's like one thing, like the whole thing around the Californian sketch, like if you haven't seen it, it's basically like a soap opera. It's called The Californians.
Everyone's in bad blonde wigs. They're doing, like, Californian accents.
Yeah, and then they talk about, like, routes to get around town, like, which I guess
I take
is some...
the 405, and then I cut off to this, and then I do take a shortcut here. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've only... Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So much vitriol. Like, I mean, I've only been to California once in my life, so
same.
I don't... So, like, I guess I kind of get it. I guess that's what they do. I guess people just talk about routes to get around California all the time.
It is apparently a big California thing, but
like, is it a sketch that's funnier if you're from California or you live in California?
I think there are some people from California who do like that sketch.
Okay. Maybe.
And those people are wrong.
Wow. Whoa.
And
scorched the earth.
I mean,
because it's like one of those things like...
It's just the worst, people.
Like a lot of times they'll do sketches where you'll only get it if you live in New York or you're from New York.
Yeah, I mean, the show can
so maybe
be very
that.
New York-centric at times.
So maybe that's for California. Maybe it's very just California.
I don't know. I fantasize about being there the day that they conceived that sketch and just punching everyone in the face.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Just...
This makes you violently angry.
I hate that sketch, man.
It's not.
I hate it.
No,
I hate it so much.
He's not crying, everybody. He's like laughing. It's like a laugh cry.
Oh.
This sketch broke you.
It's just so bad. It's so bad, and it never got any better. It wasn't one of those things where it starts out funny, and then it gets really unfunny, and then right. It comes back around again to funny. No, it never made that turn. It was just unfunny from beginning to end.
Yeah, like, I expect there to be type of turn or some type of twist in it to, like, kind of maybe make fun of itself, but it never really does that. It just kind of, middles along.
And, like, there used to be... At the end of their SNL's YouTube videos, when they post sketches to YouTube and stuff, they'd have that little thing at the end where it's like, oh, please subscribe and all that. And they used to show like just a thing of the cast looking in the mirror like they would do at the end of the California sketch. And they're all like adjusting their hair
stuff.
And it was like a close up of, I think, Kenan Thompson and Vanessa Bayer and a couple other people. And they're adjusting their blonde wigs. Right. Even just seeing that for those 2 seconds would fill me with rage.
Just flames on the side of my face.
Exactly. I would go into Mrs. White from Clue.
heavy.
Breath. I would get all Madeline Kahn about it.
It's not. Yeah. It's just, guys, if you feel like we're being too harsh on it,
we are not.
You can tweet us, but like we're on the right side of history.
I will die on this hill. The Californian sucks.
We're on the right side of history on this one. Yeah. It's just.
I mean. And like the people involved with it, I usually love them. Like
Hader's great.
Bill Hader, Taron Killam.
Yeah,
those are two of my favorites.
But this guy,
Fred Armisen, I'm hot and cold on. But
it just never goes anywhere. It's just wow. All right,
and they do that close up of everybody. And,
okay, all right, let's go to the next sketch. I don't. let's try to bring back. Let's try to bring back some semblance of sanity.
Next.
All right, this one I'm going to have a lot of to say.
We have feelings about this sketch.
The Weezer sketch.
It was a dinner party.
Yes.
Where they're listening to it's three couples. They're getting together. Leslie Jones and Kenan Thompson, they're a couple that's new to the neighborhood, and they're being welcomed by the other two couples. We had Matt Damon and Cecily Strong as a couple, and then who are the others?
Beck and Heidi?
Beck and Heidi. I know Heidi was the woman. I forget who the dude was. But it doesn't matter.
Wow. Beck Bennett, it doesn't matter.
That's right. Well, that's his last show.
oh, shit. oh, boy.
Say what now? And so they're piping in some music, and then...
it's a Weezer's cover of Africa.
Which was a recent thing. It was a viral thing.
It's like their biggest hit in a while.
Well, there was this one guy who was apparently leading a campaign on Twitter to have Weezer cover the song Africa by Toto.
Yeah.
And Weezer... Didn't do it. And then they recorded another Toto song.
They recorded Rosanna. And then they released
Epic Trolling.
Yeah.
And
then they recorded Africa, and now it's like a huge hit.
It became a thing.
Yeah. I wonder if that...
Did it actually like chart?
It did, yeah. Very much so. It's everywhere. It's on like mainstream radio. It's like top 100. It's a hit.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. It makes me wonder like if that guy got any money or anything for it.
I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't know. I mean, he was probably just happy that Weezer covered Africa.
That's right.
But this...
My reward is a job well done.
This this starts a huge debate about Weezer, which is a debate that has happened, I think, any time like two Weezer fans have gotten together in the same room.
Very much. Oh, let me ask you this. Where do you stand on Weezer? Are you a Weezer fan or casual fan? Let's get into this.
Well, I would say I can safely be qualified as a Weezer fan. Okay. I have here. I'm showing you my phone. We got a lot of things.
Okay.
Phone. And I got every.
You bought Hurley?
I bought Hurley. Hurley was like the last one that I got.
Ratatouille.
I kind of dropped off the Weezer train.
Wow.
Wow.
I've
just blown Darren's mind here.
It's like I found out Sean Lennon was on stage.
I am a Weezer fan. I haven't kept up with the last couple albums. I may have to get back on the Weezer train.
Okay. All right. We can get
into
this.
So where do you stand on the Weezer?
I am a Weezer fan as well, a devotee. Basically what happened is in the sketch, Matt Damon was saying how, their new stuff is good. They have the Black Album coming out, which they actually do.
Right.
And then Leslie Jones comes back with saying, you said you're a fan, but everybody knows they haven't made a good album since Pinkerton.
Right.
Which I agree with her. Like, there was going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Like, the person who wrote this sketch wrote it specifically for Weezer fans.
Yes.
Like, if
because there was all sorts of deep cut references,
very deep
and accurate.
Yes,
it was all accurate. They did not make up anything for this sketch.
Like when Leslie Jones said, "Weezer died when Matt Sharp left the band." Like, I felt that. I really like, because I feel that, I have said that on numerous occasions to people.
And Matt Damon at one point, he says, "I'm just going to say it. Pork and Beans is better than Buddy Holly."
And I know that's a joke, but I at that moment I wanted to almost drive to Rockefeller Center and choke him out, because like that wow. is. Pork and Beans is a terrible song. It's just not.
See, I like Pork and Beans. What? I'm not going to say it's better than Buddy Holly.
All right,
but I think it's a good song.
I'll listen to it again. But I remember listening. Wow. I remember listening to it and just not. It just seemed. Maybe just because their writing style, it just seems too simplistic from what they were doing. Like the first two mm-hmm. albums were. I looked like the writing is even more heartfelt, and then kind of around, I guess, the Make Believe album, their stuff kind of get more simple, and it just, I don't know, there's something about it changed, definitely, but I don't mm-hmm. that's just I was not.
See, I think, like, for most of their albums, and like I said, I haven't really heard much of the last two albums. I haven't even listened to Hurley that much, honestly.
Hurley,
okay. Yeah. But I felt like up until then, like, they had at least a couple really solid songs on each album that they did, which I think is a good, pretty good batting average for a band.
That's true. But I mean, I guess it's one of those things where when you come out of the gate with like two strong albums, and mm-hmm. also I mean, when Pinkerton came out, it wasn't really well received when it first
it was
came.
Not
yeah
it was not and that's something that it's an album that people love in retrospect,
right? It's like I always, it's kind of like the way the Beastie Boys second album, Paul's Boutique,
mm-hmm.
like when that came out, it wasn't really, people weren't digging it, but people, you know, it took a couple of years for people to catch up to it. Because mm-hmm. I guess people wanted like another License to Ill, where they're just talking about drinking and
right,
partying.
Right,
and
yeah.
And then Paul's Boutique, it was a little bit more introspective and a little bit more complicated and grown up and mature, and people weren't digging it. Mm-hmm. But like now, people like it.
Right.
And like the same thing with Pinkerton, where people weren't digging it because it didn't have the same catchy hooks that the Blue Album did. But
yeah,
now
it wasn't
people
as,
like,
it wasn't as poppy, and it was more introspective. And yeah,
right, right.
But now people like look back at it and they're like, oh, that was a masterpiece.
And
you fucking hated it in 1996.
Exactly. And I think from what I've read, that really kind of did a number on Rivers, because like he was like,
he went away for a few years,
yeah.
and he went to Harvard, and he did. Rivers Cuomo, lead
yeah,
singer
Rivers
of Weezer.
Cuomo.
If you do not know, because yeah,
why? Yeah, why would?
Because you know,
but it's like it definitely it messed with him, his mind, mm-hmm, and like mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever been the same since. Like, I mean, the Green Album, I liked it. I mean, I know some people have mixed feelings about like Hash Pipe and Island in the Sun. I like those songs.
I like those both.
I've heard people say like Island in the Sun is it's not, but I like it. I like it, and but yeah, definitely like the album after. Well, no, Maladroit was okay. I like Dope Nose, but then after
that's a great song. I listened to it this morning.
Yeah, yeah. And then after that, it was the Make Believe album. And the Make Believe album, I think that's when I was like,
that's when you got off the Weezer train.
That's when I started to see like mm-hmm. I don't know about this, because I'll listen to the album again, but I remember just not being very impressed with it, and just like I don't know, it just seemed very simplistic, and it didn't seem to have the same heart as before.
Let's see. Make Believe has Beverly Hills, Perfect Situation, This Is Such a Pity, and We Are All on Drugs. I like all those songs. Those are my favorites from the album.
Right. I will listen to it again, but I remember listening to the album and be like, I don't know about this.
I like some stuff on the Red album. Troublemaker is one of my favorite Weezer songs.
Wow,
legit. That I think
controversial.
Is a great song. Ratitude. I love the song. If you're wondering if I want you to, I want you to.
That's
a
catchy song.
I think that's a great
yeah.
song.
Why don't you grow up and listen to Ratitude? That was Matt Damon's line. I may have to throw that into my lexicon.
There were some great lines. There was, let me.
Why don't you grow up and listen to Ratitude?
And I liked it. At one point, Leslie Jones just goes, "Oh, you're dumb." She just like flat out said, "Oh, I get it. You're dumb.
Oh, you're just stupid."
Honestly, though, I refuse to believe that Leslie Jones in real life has this many opinions about Weezer.
I mean, she might be a Weezer fan. Like, it's possible.
Really?
It's possible, but like
a black woman in her late 40s.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I like listening to Sinatra.
Okay. Once,
well, not a lot of Sinatra, but you know that one song.
I don't know. She just does not strike me as the type to be a Weezer fan.
She might.
I wonder.
She might be. I don't want to.
And she played it beautifully. I mean, she's. Leslie Jones, I'm mixed on Leslie Jones at best, but she's really good at playing anger.
Yeah.
And she was great in this sketch.
I mean, she was very much just so, like,
you know, she was supposed to get in Matt Damon's face, and she got in Matt Damon's face.
Yeah. Her passion and the way she was saying, like, oh, they haven't made a good album since Matt Sharp. Like, I felt that.
Yeah,
Leslie, get him.
You, like, posted about it on Facebook this morning.
It really...
You, like, shared the sketch, and you were like, I am... You were like, this isn't in my wheelhouse.
This is my wheelhouse. Because it's just... Because, like, as far as Weezer fans go, there are tons of people who believe once Matt Sharp left, the band was never the same.
Mm-hmm,
and
I'm
in agreement with that. Like, I feel like they have good singles... Like after the Pinkerton album, here and there, but as far as the full album is concerned, like they haven't had a full album that's really great. But I will admit, like there are some good songs on their most recent stuff. Like have you listened to the White Album yet?
No,
has some good stuff on it. There's Do You Want to Get High is a good song.
Okay,
there's a song King of the World.
Uh-huh.
It's a good song, and then there's the other one, Thank God for Girls, I believe.
I know that song.
Yeah,
I know that.
Like
song.
The White Album's a solid album, but then after that. Was Pacific Daydream
the color albums are generally well regarded?
Yeah, that's why I'm cautiously optimistic about the Black Album that comes out next year, but we'll see. But the White Album that came out like was the second to last album was actually pretty decent.
I actually brought something because this sketch it reminded me of a passage or an essay in one of Chuck Klosterman's books.
Ooh.
Are we getting
literary here?
I'm getting literary. I brought along a little thing. Chuck Klosterman, if you don't know him, he's an author. He writes about pop culture a lot. And he has in his book Eating the Dinosaur, he has a thing about Weezer and the way they are perceived. And I thought I'd read a little about it. It's
really
short. And he says, people are generally disappointed by Weezer albums. It's become the band's defining ethos. They consistently disappoint the people who love them most. It's an insular version of disappointment that makes no immediate sense. Weezer distresses the exact same people with every record they release. This should be impossible. If every new record a certain band makes disappoints its base, one would assume chagrined consumers would eventually give up. But people have a different kind of relationship with Weezer, and it's due to the songwriting of frontman Rivers Cuomo. He writes completely straightforward lyrics presented through music devoid of irony. He exclusively presents literal depictions of how he views the world and how he almost exclusively plays guitar riffs that he personally want to hear as a fan. There are no other major elements in his work. The tone of his guitar is an attempt to replicate the tone of guitarists he appreciated as a teenager, particularly Ace Frehley and Carlos Cavazo. He enjoys metaphors, but the metaphors are hyper-obvious stand-ins for his own confessionals. He tosses around stilted hip-hop language and makes it seem like he's mocking all the affluent white kids obsessed with superficial blackness, but he used to be one of those kids. His lyrical fantasies, such as living life as a professional surfer, are faithful expository descriptions of what he fantasizes about. In 1994, he wrote an unreleased rock opera called Songs from the Black Hole that involves six separate characters, one of whom was a robot. But he later admitted the entire narrative was really about his own experiences on tour. Artistically and motivationally, Weezer makes completely unaffected music, more authentic than Black Flag or Bright Eyes or Janis Ian. But because every other aspect of Cuomo's public life seems constructed and self-aware, and because he displays all the usual qualities we've come to associate with kitchen irony, audiences are unwilling to view Weezer's music as a reflection of Cuomo's autobiography. So he goes on a bit, but is basically making the point that Rivers is completely sincere in his stuff, but because his audience identified so strongly with those first few albums,
right.
And it was like a lot of earnest white dudes, and it spoke to them,
right.
And they were expecting the subsequent albums to speak to them as much, but by the time that Weezer made those other albums, he was like a full-fledged rock star, and so he was not having experiences that the audience could identify with anymore.
And All right, that's so, fair enough.
It's very interesting. Eating the dinosaur. Order it.
Wow.
You know,
order it, guys.
Go to Amazon. It makes a great gift.
Just in time for the holidays.
That's right.
No, that makes sense. Like, definitely with those first two albums, like me and like a bunch of other nerds, they had like a very strong, like, you know, emotional connection to it.
Yeah, and we identified with it.
Yeah, very much so. And like the fact that he went from that to like, you know, Can't Stop Partying with Lil Wayne.
Right.
It's like, what are you doing? Like, yeah. is this you now, or like, is this who you always were?
It didn't speak to his audience anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I mean, but at the same time, I think I know, I have also noticed that like, he seems to always, like, it seems like Weezer's just constantly making music for teenagers, even though they're getting older.
Yeah. So I mean, they're like in their 40s now.
Yeah, and like they're not making music for 40-year-olds. They're making music for teenagers and people in their 20s, just like when they first did. And it's so like they're trying to get like a new audience, and like their old audience just isn't connecting with it. And I don't know. I have a very complicated relationship with Weezer, but
we'll delve into this further on our Talking About Weezer podcast.
Yes. Weezer
coming to the non-pro network soon.
Yeah, Weezer talk.
Weezer talk.
Wow, yeah, we delved into that one.
We busted
out a book. Holy hell.
We went in depth.
Holy moly.
But you know what? I think this sketch, it spoke to the audience too, because it got like a big applause break at the end. Like, so much so that it seemed to like be cutting off Leslie Jones's last line. She was saying something, and I don't know if it was important to the sketch or not.
No, well, I think at the very end, like, the guy leaves, and it's like, you know where you can find me? In Beverly Hills. Yeah. But then she said, like, oh, yeah, actually, like, kind of like that.
Yeah, I also like at the end where we realized that Matt Damon was the ex-husband of Heidi Gardner's character.
Oh, yeah.
That was like,
that was weird.
If you want me back. And she's like, no, I don't.
that was a weird throwaway.
I like that. Just I like it when they toss in, like, just weird bits of information like that.
Very much so. As far as the sketch, I thought it was like a sketch, like, specifically for, like, only a few people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it seems like most of the audience got it. We're on board with it.
But I thought this is a tough word to say.
Specificity.
Thank you.
Specificity.
The specifics of it.
Yes.
Made it really work. I mean, having in all those specific details, it really made the work, the sketch work, and it was stronger because of that.
I think so. I think like most people know. If you don't know Weezer, you know maybe like another band or an artist who like people who are very split on, like Kanye West or something.
And
I
loved how their obsessiveness was playing against the other characters. Like, wait, is Weezer even still together? Are we really having this conversation?
Yeah.
Like, everybody was like indifferent at best to Weezer.
It's like, I don't want to go off on a rant. It's like, well, then please don't.
So it made the passion of Matt Damon and Leslie Jones's characters all the funnier because everyone else was just like, huh? What? They haven't thought about Weezer in 15 to 20 years.
Yeah, so. I mean, which I imagine is how the rest of the world is, and it's just
exactly.
Like, you know, all these Weezer fans.
Yeah, when they're not, like, you know, obsessed.
Yes.
Obsessed repressed nerds.
Yes. On a podcast talking about Saturday Night Live.
And Weezer.
Gotcha.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.